At this time, I would like to present our speaker for tonight, Margaret from LA, right? Come on up, let's do this. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Margaret. You guys are something else. This is a lovely place, a lovely place. And it's my first time here. And I got sober in La Mesa in 1988, so I don't travel very much. Anyway, from the moment we arrived, everyone has just been so cordial and so friendly and so open and so generous with anything that we needed. And I wanted to thank all of you, really. It's really a wonderful reflection of the kind of sobriety that's here. And we need to have more of that. A little bit about my story. First of all, I wanted to welcome Nicole. I don't see her sitting there yet. Okay, I'm glad she's here, and congratulations on your 90 days, Lucy. That's very exciting, and I'm really grateful that you came back. And that's the key. The key here is to just, no matter what, just keep coming back. I'm pretty sure there's probably other new people here that maybe haven't raised their hand, because I remember when I was new, I'd come in late and I'd leave early. And that was kind of the drill. And that way I didn't have to raise my hand or nobody was going to talk to me. And then I couldn't understand why I wasn't getting sober. So it wasn't until I finally became at a place where I was really done drinking. And a little bit about my where I grew up. I grew up in a big family, a big Irish Catholic German family with 9 kids. And we grew up on the East Coast, and it was really a pretty rowdy group. It still is in a lot of ways. And we all went to this Catholic school, and everybody was, you know, going down this line. And pretty soon, you know, there was always active alcoholism in my family growing up. My grandfather was a physician, and he was a practicing alcoholic, and almost lost his career and their home many times because of his drinking. And he was too ashamed to go into an AA meeting because he didn't want people to know. And I often think he was in New York. I mean, Dr. Bob was right there. And it just wasn't, that wasn't something that happened. But I'm really grateful that I got to hear the message. And when I grew up, there was a lot of chaos and lots of things going on in the 60s. And by the time I was 13, I started to pick up a drink. And it was always not sneaking it and sneaking cigarettes and all that kind of stuff. And the first time I drank, I got so drunk and I threw up. I mean, I just threw up. It was awful. And you'd think I would have said, God, I'm never going to do that again. And I did. I thought that, I don't know what happened. It must have been something I ate. It was never the alcohol. I would never get to that place where it's like, you know, I was fine, and then I drank, and then all that happened. Every time something happened, I'd be like, well, it must have been, you know, the temperature of the air. Must have been something. You know, it was probably that soda they put into it. Always there was an excuse as to why I couldn't face the fact that there was a really strong possibility that I could be an alcoholic, because I always had that fear growing up since whenever we'd have get-togethers, I'd hear the family, especially my father's family. They had a big group of kids, and they'd all talk about my grandfather, the way he drank and how crazy he was, and he's never going to drink again. And my grandfather would be sitting right there. And I just remember thinking, why do they do that? And then when I drank and I became out of control almost right away, I thought, God, I wonder if I have that same thing like Grandpa. And so for years, I just stayed in a lot of denial. And I'd have to, the whole thing, I blacked out, like right out of the gate, I was a blackout drinker. There wasn't any like middle of the road. It wasn't like, well, I drank a little bit. It was like I went right into the wall. And then it would be okay for a little bit. And then it would get really bad. And then it would be okay for a little bit. So I got through high school. I remember graduating from high school, I went to school up in Monterey, and I had a blackout. I was in a blackout on my graduation, and I remember going home, going, "Did I get my diploma? Oh, there it is." And I had no recollection of being on the field or any of those things, and you know, somehow I'd get up the next day and function, and nobody would say anything, or people would say, you know, were you drinking a little bit yesterday? And I'd always lie. And then, you know, I started to go out into the world a little bit, and when I got a license to drive, I got a 502. Imagine that. I went into the bar business. Imagine that. And so when the policeman pulled me over and said, "Have you been drinking?" I said, "Well, I just had one." And so always the lying, always the hiding, always the covering up, always never wanting to admit that alcohol played a part in any of it. I was just so ashamed and so afraid, but then I'd go and do it again. And my whole life was like that. You know, I'd go to work and everybody was just like, you know, "You've had a really stressful day. We're going to go get a drink. Come on." Even though I was like 17, I was a tall kid, so they let me go in the bars and they'd serve me. That's before you had to have an ID and all that stuff. So you know, this keeps going on, and I wind up getting pregnant in my early 20s with my daughter. And so I have a hiatus from drinking for a little while, and then, you know, that didn't last very long. When she was little, I went back to drinking again. And by this time, you know, my life was way unmanageable and I was way powerless. And I knew I had a problem, and I just didn't know what to do about it. The idea of telling somebody the truth, I think about all the wreckage and how many opportunities. I remember being in the hospital and the doctor said, "You know, do you drink?" And I'm like, "No." You know, I remember being in the courtroom, "Do you drink?" And I'm like, "No." It just was, I was stressed out that day. There was always this excuse. And I'm sure people just looked at me and went, "Okay, well, keep coming back." And so one day, after the second DUI and a felony, you know, I started to realize that this thing, you know, was really going to blow up in my face. And I woke up one morning and the whole side of my body was covered in bruises, and I couldn't remember what happened. And my little daughter was 7, and she looked at me that morning, and I could hardly look at her. She was so ashamed of me, because apparently she knew what happened, and I didn't. And so I thought, you know, I think I need to go to therapy. So make this therapy appointment, because I'm having these anxiety attacks, and the gal that starts to work with me says, "You know what? It sounds like you need to get to a meeting. Sounds like you got some things going on with alcohol." And I had gone into one of my appointments in a blackout. And I remember when I went back in on my next session, she goes, "Do you remember the last session?" I'm like, "Kind of." And finally it came out. You know, finally I was able to tell somebody and be honest. And it was scary and relieving all at the same time. And so I remember she said, "If you want to continue these sessions, you have till the end of the summer." So August 22nd, I went to my first AA meeting. And it was a women's meeting. And it was right down the block from my house. And I went in there, and there were 7 women in there. And I walked in the door, and this woman goes, "Hi, are you new?" And I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "Well, what's going on?" And I just told her my whole story, like in 5 seconds. Like, right? And she goes, "Oh, well, I'm just the greeter." And my name's Marion. I don't even have 30 days, but I'm so glad you're here. And somebody that can help you is going to be here soon, I promise. And I was like, "Oh, no, I have to stay here and do that again." You know, because I thought it was like confession. You just go in and say one shot, and then you're out. So anyway, all these women came in, and man, they were just dressed to the nines, and they looked like they had their lives way more together than mine. And they were so kind to me. And they were so real. I mean, they started sharing their story. And let me tell you something, I could have sat right next to them at the bar. They probably did. And you know, our stories were just every person that shared, another mother shared. And suddenly that shame of being a drunken mother, I wasn't the only one. And that moment when we get to that place where we can recognize, this isn't just me, there's somebody else like me. Whether I'm a man or whatever, alcoholism has no bars. I mean, it doesn't matter where you come from, it doesn't matter where you're going, it doesn't matter where you were brought up, it doesn't matter. If I have this reaction and I have this allergy in the mind and body, when I pick up a drink, that sets off, you know, the mental obsession, and then it kicks in with, you know, the physical addiction, and the craving starts, that train's gone. And you know, I can stand here tonight and tell you that even though I haven't had a drink for over 36 years now, thank you God, I know that if I picked up a drink right now, I would be an instant train wreck. Within, you could be like this, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I mean, that's just the way I rolled. And I did believe people when they said, you know what, you're like a sleeping tiger. That thing is growing even though it's sleeping. And I do know one thing, that I've watched enough people in my time coming to meetings, I've watched enough people come back in here and they had a little time and then they go back out to see if it still works. And not one of those people has ever said, I came back to tell you that I'm doing so great. And I can drink like a gentleman, and I'm cool. Like, not one person, they come back, they don't have a job, they don't have the wife, they lost their teeth, they don't have a driver's license. You know, there's always this big gouge that happens. And then they, you know, it's like the guy, you know, the jaywalker, you know, he starts out going across the street, you know, and pretty soon, you know, I mean, they're pulling him out from an ambulance, and he's like, no, I got this. And that's the insanity of alcoholism, that idea that someday and somehow I'm going to be able to drink like everybody else. That's not my experience. What I've watched and what I really know is that until I could admit to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, and that's what I am, it's not going to change. My eyes are going to be blue. They could change as I get older. Everything else is. But, you know, what I know is that my alcoholism isn't going to, that's it. And I have two roads I can go down. I can go down a road and continue to see if my disease is still active, or I can take that time and energy and put it towards getting into recovery and helping another alcoholic to stay sober. And today, I chose to come here, and I'm usually in bed at 8:15. Just so you know. And we were like, we had to take a nap today to stay up. You know, I'm so honored and grateful to be able to come to a room of people that are here because they're serious about staying sober. They're serious about reaching out to the newcomer. And Nicole, I see you're back. And I'm so grateful that you're here. And I'm so happy to know that you're taking a step today in the right direction. This is day three. You know, if you continue to do what you're doing right now, tomorrow, you'll have 4 days. And if you continue to do that the next day and the next day, they just add up. And that's how you get to be an old timer. You know, you just don't drink and get old. I mean, that's kind of the deal. And you help others. Always you help others. You gotta help others. And so when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, they said, okay, so you gotta get a sponsor. When I was in the bar business, sponsors were different. Sponsors were the guys that, you know, picked up the tab. So I was like, we have to do that? What, a sponsor? I thought, what? And so they said, no, this is somebody that's going to work with you. I remember women work with women and guys work with guys. So I was like, okay. And they said, and you're going to go to women's meetings for the first year because you're a little confused. So that's what I did. And if they told me, you got to go run down that street and come back, I would have ran down that street and came back. And little by little, I was just so sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was so exhausted from my own insanity, coming to, not remembering anything, trashing my life, trashing the lives of people that I loved. You know, that little girl saw a lot of things that she didn't need to see as a little one. And, you know, God bless her. I wound up, you know, taking her to Alateen so she could get it together. And she's really together, you know. And she's just been just this solid person. And as she was growing up, you know, I wound up, you know, getting a place. And fortunately, I was able to take really good care of her. And eventually, in Porter Hall, I met my husband, okay, in that meeting. And I got to meet my husband, Paul. And he was, this was in 1991. And Courtney was about 13, not nine then, somewhere in there. And I had 2 years of sobriety. My sponsor thought it'd be a good idea for me to start dating. I was like, no, I'm finally got my life on track. I think I'm just going to be like this forever. She said, no, you're young and you got to get out there a little bit. So he was the only person I ever dated, and then I married him. And I was really grateful because the whole dating thing, I wasn't very good at it. And so we wound up dating for a couple, we were friends for a year, and then we wound up dating for a couple of years, and then we got married. And we had this big wedding, and my dearest friend Susie was there picking me up at the crack of dawn. All the girls from my Saturday morning meeting came because we got married at the church, and then we came home. And we had the big wedding reception on our patio. And one of the girls from my Saturday meeting made the cake, and another one came because my dad and I made quiche all week. We had a brunch, and they fired up the ovens and got all the food going. And we just had this big meeting as a reception. It was really cool. And everybody was there, and I met my husband in the meeting. He had a little bit less time than I did, but he stayed center. And then after we got married, you know, things got more important. Things in his life got a little more important, and he was so concerned about work and getting this work stuff going that his meetings started to take a back seat. And so now there's a lot of dry alcoholism in my house. And I'm not sure what to do because now I'm pregnant. And my sponsor said, well, you're going to go to meetings and you're going to help others. And you're going to have this little baby. And he's not so little anymore. He grew up. And you know, there was a lot of years that went by, and I'd get a lot of grief when it was time to go to meetings because, you know, he was just wanted it all to just be in a different, everything in a box now. And I couldn't be in a box. And I knew that if I didn't go to my meetings, you know, my sponsor made it really clear, you know, your disease is your responsibility. So you take care of business and everything else will have to fall into place. And then years went by, and we kind of made peace with it. And I would always say, well, you know, you can come with me. And he'd go, no, I'm good. And then we got a phone call one afternoon. He wasn't feeling very well, and he went in for a blood checkup, and he was diagnosed with leukemia. And so that was on Halloween, and that was a rough day. And he had to be admitted the next morning to the hospital, and he wound up spending almost 50 days there because the chemotherapy treatments for leukemia, the kind he had, was like the worst kind you could get. And so when he was able, he survived that first couple of rounds of chemotherapy. We almost lost him a couple of times. And eventually, when he came out and came home, he probably weighed about 90 pounds by then. And the first thing he wanted to do was thank God, and he wanted to come and thank the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, because he came home and there were 16 messages on the answering machine checking on me and checking on John and checking on him. And he just couldn't believe it. He said, I always thought that place was just for drinking. And I said, no, it's for living. It's a place for living. If you're here and you have a problem with alcohol, that is the tip of the iceberg. I'm telling you, there's so much underneath the water. And you don't have to be afraid of it. I was terrified of it. And the more I kept coming to meetings and taking these steps and working with others and learning how to, identify the fear, learning how to work through those things, holding people's hands while I was taking steps, talking about things that I never thought I'd talk about, and getting clean and healthy and beginning to make a difference in my own life. Little by little, my life got better. So we went down to the Sunday morning meeting that was originally at Porter Hall, and we moved across the street because they closed the building. And he went to thank everybody. And from that point on, he went to meetings almost every day. And he started to get better. And we thought things were going to turn around. And for a while, you know, for a couple of months, he finished up. We had 6 months of chemotherapy. And when he finished up the 6 months, we thought, okay, well, he was cancer-free. And we thought that's going to be really great. And that lasted for a few months. And then, unfortunately, the cancer came back. And it was right around the time that my mother was in, she was very ill. And my father wasn't far behind her. And my mom passed. And he helped while we were going through that. And then my father passed 7 weeks later. And then my sponsor was diagnosed with cancer. And then she passed. And then, unfortunately, my husband passed, all within a matter of a year's time. And so I was pretty much a deer in headlights by then. And our son was just starting high school. And he had been a deer in headlights for a long time there. We were all like going like this, what is happening in our lives? And we were all doing the best we could. Okay, I was sober. That's all I knew. I was sober, I was helping when I could, and I was at my meetings. I always went to meetings. I mean, I just didn't miss. In between things, I'd hit a meeting. And there wasn't any Zoom then, so you just had to make sure you had your butt in a chair. That was the deal. And thank God for that, because when you have to make sure your butt's in a chair, you hear what you need to hear, and it helps us. It helps us so much, especially when you don't want to come. Nicole, when you don't want to come, that's when you got to get in the car and do it. You just get in that car. And you just go, you know, I can probably help somebody that has one day. And that's the truth. You can help somebody that has an hour in this meeting, and you're going to be okay. And he had a lot of the benefits and things like that for our family. So I went back to school, and I started to got a job over at Grossmont Hospital. That's a whole another wild ride. I don't know how many people know where Grossmont is, but it's a pretty wild place, right? And there I was in the emergency room and working, and I remember just going, what am I doing here? But I got a paycheck, and I had a skill, and I could help patients. And guess what? 75% of the patients were having a problem with alcohol or drugs. So I was in the right place. And so I could 12-step people all over the hospital. It was really cool in that little incognito way. They thought they were going for an x-ray, and I'd be like, so did you get to a meeting this morning? And it's kind of like on the backdrop. And our son wound up suffering with this disease as well. And 4 years ago on Christmas Day, the men in this program were able to work with him, and I'm so grateful, Johnny, that you're sober. Good job.
Don't clap. It's nothing special.
And I have to tell you, as a mother, and you're watching your kid going down that road, and you know that road goes where it goes, and you're watching it, and there's nothing you can do. It was like watching my husband, you know. There was nothing I could do. It was like watching water go through my fingers. And so I wound up going into Al-Anon. That's another program, and it really, really helped me, and it helps me to this day. So what I can tell you is that this disease is fatal. I watched many, many people from our meetings. I've watched many people in the hospital pass from this illness, and it's ugly. It's an ugly way to pass. It's painful. It's gut-wrenching. The families are so broken the people that we, you know, it says we're like a tornado roaring through, right? And have you ever watched a tornado, at the end of a tornado? Cars are flung. There's nothing left except debris and chaos and people that are brokenhearted. And that's what this disease is like when it just goes awry. And there's a lot of yets. I mean, if you're here today, and even if you've had a drink today and you're new, and you haven't raised your hand, I'm so glad that you're here, because maybe you'll hear something and you can say, you know, maybe I could do this, because I never thought I could do this. I never thought I could come here and really stay. I thought, you know what? That's those other people. They always get things right. They can figure it out. I was never, you know, I was like that when I was young, but then I had that self-will, man. Self-will is probably one of the most dangerous things we experience. And God gives us self-will. So in the book, it tells me I have to find a power greater than myself. And the one thing I can guarantee you is there's a God, but it's not me and it's not you. I mean, God works through us. It's like we're pipes. And this message comes through us. But, you know, if you try to hold the message in your hand, where is it? It's here. You know, it touches your heart. Something in your mind will awaken. Something in your heart will change. There's a whole new world waiting for you. All you have to do is be willing to not pick up that drink, because once I pick up the drink, once I pick up that thought that I tell myself it's possible that I can drink again like a lady and it'll all work out, I never drank like that. Not once. I was a blackout, fall down, ran your pantyhose, drunk. That's just, I couldn't find my shoes the next day. I mean, all those things. Couldn't find my car, didn't know where to park my truck. You know, blaming everybody because of my drinking. You know, if you lived like I did, you drink too. All the excuses, you know, we have so many excuses sometimes. And, you know, at some point, when I got sick and tired of hearing my own excuses time and time again, well, it was this or it was that, I can tell you right now, I've watched some of my closest family members. I was with all three people when they passed. All three, my mom, my dad, and my husband. I was with all three of them in their last breath. And you know, I didn't find it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug or a pity pot. You know, I didn't have to do that. What I knew I needed to do was to have a good cry and keep moving. Have a big cry and keep moving. Call somebody and keep moving. I mean, that hospital bed was surrounded with people from our program all the time. There was always somebody in the hall waiting to talk to me. Always somebody, you know, calling up. We did have cell phones then, you know, calling up. But when I first got sober, there weren't any cell phones. You had to find a payphone, and you had to have coins too. And you know, I said, always carry some dimes, because, you know, if you get in trouble, you got to make that phone call. And, you know, those phone calls are what save our lives. And this program has allowed me to have the life that I have today, because it taught me to find a power greater than myself through you guys. It taught me that I can change through you guys. I look at these steps. You know, when I first came here, I looked up on the wall and they go, you got to take the steps. So I read them really fast. And I go, okay, I did that. And they go, no, you got to take them. There's a book. You got to get the book too. And I was like, a book? And they go, a big book. And I'm looking for this, like one of those. You got a big book? Like, where? How am I going to put it? I mean, and don't read the book by yourself. Like, read it with somebody. You know what I mean? Like, get somebody that reads and have them read with you. And look for a sponsor. And, you know, when I found my first sponsor, I thought, oh, my God, she's going to be here to help me. Thank goodness. We're on step four. I'm finally getting a hold of this thing. I've got, you know, 6 months of sobriety. I'm getting things. It's coming into play. And she tells me she's going to move. And I go, well, you can't, because they told me I can't make any changes in the first year. And they go, she goes, I know, but I'm moving. You're going to have to find another sponsor. And I went, oh, my God, I don't think that's possible. And she goes, it is. You're going to have to try it. And then a week later, I came home, and there was a lockbox on my condo, this little condominium I was renting. there was a lockbox, and I'm like, what is on my door? And I call up my landlord. I go, what's on my door? I can't get in the house. And he goes, oh, I forgot to tell you. I'm selling the house. And I go, you can't sell this. I only have 6 months. What's with these people? They told me no big changes in the first year. I'm not allowed to do anything different. I have to. So they said, well, I guess you're going to have to, you know, start. Well, lo and behold, in my first 6 months of sobriety, two of the meetings that I was going to needed secretaries. And they said, Margaret, you're going to secretary. And I go, I can't secretary. I only have 6 months. And they go, we're bending the rules. You're going to get, because we think you can do it. I was like, wait a minute. I'm starting to follow rules, and then you guys move them. And little by little, you know, it was all those things, all of those moments when I said yes, and I had no idea what I was doing, because they were going, Margaret, you're going to be secretary. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to be secretary. And I'd go home and go, I have to get the book, and I have to get the cake, the tokens, and I have to pay the bills, and I have to do all this, and then I have to keep the book separate because they're two different meetings. And you know what? It worked out. It worked out. And my daughter got really good at banking. She added up all the change, because there was a lot of change in those days. And we didn't have Venmo. It wasn't like that. And, you know, little by little, I got to know the newcomers that would come in, because I'd sign the court slips. And there's a few court slips here, so welcome. And, you know, I remember the guy said, well, somebody thinks there's a problem with alcohol, you know, and sign the paper. I can't tell you how many people have celebrated birthdays, long sobriety, that came in with those pieces of paper. You know what I'm saying? It's an opportunity. That piece of paper is an opportunity to freedom. And you know something? Just say yes. Say yes to a meeting. Somebody calls up and wants to meet you at the bar, go no. Somebody offers you a drink, just say no. No, I'm not drinking today, just for today. You don't have to do it tomorrow, just do it today. If you go home and get to bed and you haven't had a drink, there you go. Tomorrow morning's tomorrow morning. You're going to be okay. And in the beginning, I had a lot of night sweats. I was physically really, really sick. And so I had to, the old timers told me, keep the orange juice and the honey by your bed, because I was having all these nightmares. I'd get up in the middle of the night, I'd just drink the honey, drink the juice, and take the hottest bath I could take, because I was just pouring with sweat. And little by little, I got better. Little by little, physically, I got better. It just takes time. It takes practice. All of us have to just, thanks, Johnny. All of us just have to be patient, and be patient with the newcomer. If you're sponsoring people that are new, be patient. They're new. They're supposed to be clueless. I was. When I talk to my sponsees and they say something, I just go, and then I go, wait a minute, Margaret, she only has 3 hours. Come on. I was Teflon for like the year. All year I was just like Teflon. And sometimes I can still be like that. And if you have time in this program, I certainly hope that you're reaching out and sponsoring. I'm so excited to see so many people here tonight that have taken the time to come out here on a Saturday night and be there for the newcomer. Being here for you, Nicole, we're all here for you and Lucy and whoever else is new, because we want to carry this message of hope that today you can change your life. You know, the opportunity is right here before you. And it's not up to us, although sometimes I have dragged people. It says, let go or be dragged. And I have to let go. I can carry the message. I can't carry the person. But I'm just so honored that you'd ask me to speak here tonight. I'm not sure if anybody has any questions if you're new and you'd like to ask a question about anything about sobriety that you'd like me to answer for you before we finish up here. I know I'm supposed to go till 9 o'clock. It's quarter of. Chris said, you know, you can cut out early. Yeah. Anyway. I just want to, there's so many things I want to share with you about how good life in sobriety is. We can hear horror stories all day long. I'm telling you, my drinking was probably just as ugly, if not uglier than yours. And I spent time in court and in Las Colinas and in, you know, someplace, and there's a lot of yets. If I pick up a drink, that's where I'm going. And I'm not going to kid myself or fake myself out. So thank you for letting me be a part of your meeting, and I hope all of you have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Oh my goodness, Margaret, that was great. Thank you so much for coming to share your message of hope with us. And please come back and speak again. One more time for Margaret. Thank you to the Women's Auxiliary and the Minute House for a great dinner tonight. Let's circle up.